everybody, thanks for joining me here for the podcast today. I'm going to make this short and sweet. You can probably hear from my voice that after I got back from Florida, things did not sound so good going on right in there. So this one is an interview that I did at the Lawn Oncology Conference with Alan Hain, the lawn care nut himself. I'm pretty sure you're probably familiar with him. So I hope you guys enjoy this one. Here it is. So I was on Instagram and I posted this past week. I don't know if you saw it. Yeah, you saw it. I posted that I was doing a podcast with Alan Hain this week, and someone was like, no, you're doing the podcast. Like, this is the one been waiting for. This is it. So I'm a little, I think I might be a little nervous in the presence of Alan here.
Oh, stop with all that stuff.
How many times are you going to say that? Because I'm probably going to have some questions for you that you're like, please, like, stop fawning over me.
Yeah, don't do that stuff, but you can ask me any question. I'd love to talk about things. I think that's what I like about this format. We can talk about things that I can't put in videos or whatever, but yeah. I want people to know, you know, that's why I love your podcast, because it's getting behind that. Listen, you hear somebody on their channel and they're saying these things, they have these strategies, they go by these philosophies, but who's the person behind that? Like, why do they believe the way they believe?
Yes.
That's why I love your podcast.
Yeah. That was kind of really what I was going for, is I think probably just because of how long you've been doing this, like, people probably know you a little bit more of your story than some of the other people, but in general, there's still a lot of things that I think we can kind of give people a little more information about, so just makes people connect a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to do, this lighting in here, there's a lot of cameras on us. Is this making my Dog the Bounty Hunter eyes show wrong? You have to be cognizant of that.
So we're at Lawncology in Orlando. Is this the second year for you then here?
Or no, this is my first.
First, okay.
Yeah, I only met John Perry a little over a year ago. I met him in January of last year.
Okay.
And so I met him in that trade at St. Pete Beach at that Real Green Systems conference. And so this one is only a month later. So no, I was sitting on the sidelines going, man, I wish I could be there with those guys.
Yeah.
So no, I haven't been here before.
Okay. So it's kind of, but you've seen a lot of the presentations just from going to a lot of other things.
Some of the other conferences we've been to, things like that, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So Florida for you is like, I mean, this is where you grew up. How far away from where you currently live right now did you kind of grow up? And it's pretty close, right?
Yeah. I was born and raised in St. Petersburg, which is off of Tampa Bay. And so now I live just south, right outside of Bradenton, so like 20 minutes from where I grew up. Where I live now, we call that living out in the country.
Yeah.
As opposed to the city, because St. Pete's a pretty big city. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, real close.
A little bit different than probably the country up north where I am.
Definitely not the same, even though we do have cows and everything around. This is a big cattle state, so you know, right behind my house, I can hear cows making their noise at night and stuff like that.
Yeah. So is there anything about, I mean, I will say I don't know much about Florida. This is my first time ever being here, first time I've ever seen a palm tree.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
So you
that.
Can, I was pretty amazed by quite a few things. That's why I was probably nerding out last night when we were walking around, like, what is this? What is this? I've never seen. So is there anything besides weather that you specifically really like about Florida?
You know, I think it's 'cause it's home to me, so there are certain things about when you've been away from your home. I mean, I left home in 1993 and just returned a couple years ago. So there's certain things about being home, just the way the air smells certain times a year, the way the humidity feels in and out of season.
Yep.
I miss those things. I miss the salty air. I mean, I don't live near the ocean right now. I don't live near the Gulf, but I still miss being able to go to the beach.
Yeah,
I don't miss that anymore. So those things, I like being able to ride my bike year-round outside, mow my grass year-round.
Yeah.
All of those things are really nice.
That's been very different for us just getting down here, and I keep telling my wife, I'm like, this feels like July, and it's bright outside and very strange. But
we're having a little bit higher humidity than normal right now.
Yeah.
But that's good. It's good for you guys to feel that 70-degree swing from where you came from.
Yeah, and what's kind of interesting for you is that you've experienced both things where you used to live, so you kind of have a way to kind of compare those things. And you know when we say, like, it's gray outside and it's winter is tough, you actually know.
But. Yeah, you know, that was the thing people will ask me, did you ever acclimate to up north? And the answer is no. Your blood doesn't thicken up. At least mine never did. And even here, I get cold even at night. So I just couldn't handle that. But for sure, the one thing I do remember distinctly having discussions with my wife for many years was, right out, you know, we're good through Christmas and New Year's, but then right after, like, you get into that late January and February, and it's like living in this, the sky and the road are the same color gray.
Yes.
That's really tough. And I can, it's so funny, I can see that in our community online. Mm-hmm. I can see guys are a little more grumpy sometimes. And I'm like, oh, I know what you're going through up there. So yeah, I don't miss that. But you'll start getting your sunny days here.
Yep.
And it'll still be cold out, but you go outside and get that sun when you can.
Yeah, with our time change coming up here.
Yeah, March 10th, right?
A little bit, that'll help a lot. So as a kid, what kind of things were you, I mean, were you always kind of an outdoor work in the yard type of kid, or were you kind of like not into it as a kid?
So I did mow lawns as a kid. I remember the first time I decided that I thought I might want to try lawns. I think I was 11 or 12, and I needed some money because there was a girl that I wanted to take to the movies. And back in those days, you didn't take a girl to the movies. Her mom would drop her off at the mall, and my mom would drop me off at the mall. And her name was Rachel, and I thought, I really want to take Rachel to the movies. But I didn't have any money.
Uh-huh.
And so I start talking to my dad about how to make some money. He goes, I'll tell you what, you can mow the lawn and I'll pay you $5. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Uh-huh.
And so that's how that started. I started mowing my own lawn, and then I would mow a neighbor here or there. And I never had more than, I think, 4 or 5 lawns at the max. But that was my thing. I love being outside and doing that. I mean, other than that, like any other kid, I played baseball. I never was any good at it. I played a lot of tennis because in tennis you can be short and it's not as much of an advantage to the tall guys. At least I never thought it was.
Yep.
Because there's only so far you can run on a tennis court. Mm-hmm. So my little legs would still be able to do all right. So I played a lot of tennis. And again, being year round, that was a good sport to be able to do year round. And
yeah,
I went to the community pool a lot as a kid, just normal stuff. But yeah, everything outside. We were not inside kids. We didn't have air conditioning growing up. So being inside was actually hotter than being outside.
Yeah. Especially during that summertime, I'm sure it was pretty miserable.
For sure.
So we also got to see at GIE a little bit of your clogging. And if you guys haven't seen that video, it's on your channel. I have a little clip of it in one of my videos from GIE. But so that was something you actually did, like traveling around, right?
I did. That was when I was 7 or 8. I did it for 3 years or so. I think I quit when I was 10, when I was about to go into middle school, when it wasn't cool anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it started with my grandma, who is a big inspiration to me. She's where I get my green thumb from and everything. She actually started clogging. She was retired at that time, and she started clogging just as like an exercise thing with a couple of her girlfriends. You know, they would just go clog on Thursday nights.
Yep.
And so she took me and my cousin one time. We were like, oh, we want to try this. And so we did. And then I started taking lessons. And in that, I found a little community of people, and the moms all got together, and so we would just clog, and we ended up finding out eventually that they had a professional team, and they invited me to clog on their professional team, which, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, I'm just a 7-year-old kid, but the thing I loved about being on the professional team was I got to hold a girl's hand, because you had to have a partner, and it was not something that a lot of boys did, just dance, I guess, I don't know. And so there was me and one other boy and like 10 girls, and I got to hold all the girls' hands, and we would switch, because it's country dancing, so you're do-si-do-ing your partner and doing all that kind of stuff. And I just enjoyed that, and then I started realizing what it was like when people would clap for you when you finish, and that's a real interesting drug for sure. And I got a little bit addicted to that, kind of having people clap for you and being on stage.
Yep.
And that really started to fuel some things inside of me that way, as a kid, looking back on it.
A little bit of the performance thing.
Yeah,
kind of.
Just having a love for the stage and being on in front of people. And they would let us, at the end, people could come up and we would teach them how to clog. And so I really enjoyed that. I mean, I'm like 8 years old teaching, adults how to clog. That was fun. So yeah, I did that. And then I had a partner, her name was Michelle. We traveled the Southeast, Georgia and Florida, really. We traveled together just as a partner team, and we had a routine that we would do, and we would go to competitions, and we won Florida State 1 year, and that kind of stuff. Yeah, so
awesome.
Fun stuff, but I still love to clog. I love that whole thing, and of course I have my one karaoke song I do by Alabama that has a little clogging break in it. Yep. So
it works perfectly.
Yeah, you only got to do it one time, and people think you're great karaoke, and they just walk away.
So was your... we've seen your dad in a couple of videos over the years. Like, he's very good at woodworking and things like that. Was he like kind of someone that was working with you in the yard or teaching you things that way? Or did you learn from someone else? Or how did the education part of it kind of come about?
Yeah, my dad is anti-lawn.
Okay.
100%. He is not the lawn guy. He just would mow, and that was about it. It was not his thing. He also didn't do anything with Christmas lights, which is so funny because those are like two of my big things now.
Yeah.
But no, he started building cabinets. There's an instrument carry carrying case called Viking cases.
Okay.
And he actually originally made their original designs and blueprints and everything from hand on how these cases, they used to carry Moog synthesizers in them. That's what they were known for.
Okay.
So that's where he learned his crafting after he got out of the army. And he just created these cases that they would carry these Moog synthesizers in. And then when that job changed, then he became a cabinet installer, kitchen cabinet installer. There was a huge growth here in the 60s and 70s. And so he was into, you know, of growth of people moving here. And so he was in the cabinet business. And then he became a fireman. Then on the side, every fireman typically will have a side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And so his side hustle was he would build and remodel kitchens over the years. So that's him. And that's why he's crafty. And now he's built houses and things. But for the most part, I did not take part in that stuff as a kid. That's why when you look at me grabbing and gripping tools, you can tell I'm like a Neanderthal. I'm not hold hand tools right.
Yep.
So no, I didn't learn much from my dad. That's why when we work together, it's fun because I just make him do all the work. So the love of lawns though came again from my grandma. She was a very good gardener here in Florida, tropical gardener, and she would always have beautiful plants in her backyard. She actually had a rock lawn. She didn't have a lawn. They had rock xeriscape, but she had beautiful tropical plants all around her house. And so she was always just doing things to them and pruning them and taking care of them. So that's where I really got my love and my green thumb was from her. For me, it's just translated into lawns.
Mm-hmm.
But I love my palm trees and tropical plants and everything else. So.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is my dad's father, my grandfather on his side, my grandfather Hain, he had a tree spraying business here in Florida. He used to spray fruit trees in the 70s. So I also get a little bit of thumb, I think, from that side.
So what did you have when you were doing your mowing? What type of grass did you have mainly? Was it the same thing you're kind of dealing with now?
No,
what?
We had, and everybody likes to tease me about the way I pronounce this, but we had Bahia lawns I think the actual pronunciation is Bahia.
Okay.
But growing up, we always pronounced it Bahia, so it's always stuck with me. So where I lived in St. Pete, we have very sugary, sandy soils. It's basically beach. If you look at St. Petersburg on a map, it's a peninsula. It's got Tampa Bay on one side and the Gulf of Mexico on the other. So over thousands and thousands of years, it's been underwater probably several times. So it's really just beach sand. That was our sand, our soil. So the main grass type that's going to grow in that is Bahia because it's adapted to the salt and it's kind of side of the road grass, you know, and I actually have a little bit of a stigma against it now. And guys know that in the group, they'll talk about it sometimes because it also gets these really tall seed heads with a Y on the top of them. And they get really tall, really fast, like 12 inches tall. And my neighbor, he would pick these seed heads and he'd get a bunch of them in a grouping and he'd chase me around and whack me in the back of the neck with them. And so I always hated Bahia grass because of that. But that's what we had in our neighborhoods. And the rich people had St. Augustine grass. And so for me, St. Augustine grass was a status symbol. I'm not kidding you. If folks that are from St. Petersburg will know that if you live on Snell Isle, that's where the rich people are. And all the rich people had St. Augustine grass because that's a lot of fill dirt out there on those islands. And so those would have to have fill brought in. And so because of that, it wasn't that sandy soil as much. They could grow St. Augustine on it. Mm-hmm. And so that was always a status symbol. So kind of now I have a St. Augustine grass lawn. I feel like I've arrived. That's so funny, but that's how I feel.
Yeah. You know? Yep. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you remember like what you were like one of your first mowers or like what you were using when you were a kid?
I do. My dad had a Craftsman, an orange Craftsman push mower, and it only bagged, but we would just rip the bag off of it and let it mulch. So that's what it was. And very quickly, I realized that, again, we have sandy soil. So pushing a lawnmower through thin Bahia lawns that are sand, just imagine trying to run on the beach with shoes on.
Yeah.
You know how that feels, right? That's how it felt mowing. So very quickly, I realized I needed something self-propelled. And my dad came home with this blue mower one day, and I can't remember what brand it was, but the self-propulsion on it were these gears that had teeth on them. And as you would actuate a lever, these teeth would sit down on these other gears and pull the front wheels. And it was very interesting. That mower didn't last long. It was used, and we didn't know how to fix carburetors or anything like that. So that didn't last long. And then my dad bought a Honda, and that was the first real mower we bought. I remember we went to a local lawnmower shop. I don't remember the name of it. And they had Snappers, and they had Hondas. That was the two that particular dealer carried. And I remember there, the reason my dad bought the Honda was because they had a rebate where if you brought any old mower in, they give you $100. And so that's why my dad went with the Honda, because he brought in that old Craftsman we had.
Yep.
But that Honda mower ran really well. It had blade stop on it. I remember that thing was a beast, and it cut nice, and it had the turtle and the hair on it, depending how fast you wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a great mower. So that was the first mower where I actually started to enjoy the mow. And once I had that, that's when I really started to you know, like mowing lawns a little bit more and yep. earning the money and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I kind of forget about that a little bit too. When we first moved into our house, our backyard had never been taken care of. It was kind of like a pasture. And so I remember mowing it with a push mower the first few times, and it was so bumpy. And just, it's not fun at that point. It really isn't. No. Even though we really like lawns and mowing, I do remember that. And I remember my wife, I was complaining about it constantly. And she's like, well, let me try mowing it one time. So she did. And then she got like a few, you know, she went down, came back. She's like, I see what you're talking about. So,
that's yeah. when you start getting out there and fixing it.
That's when we did the major renovation. And yeah, but it is definitely, you got to have... It helps when you improve things and you really start to enjoy it at that point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, mowing a nice lawn is, that's part of it. If you're mowing a nice lawn, it's just that much more rewarding. It's instant gratification. When your lawn is long, but you know when you cut it, it's going to look good, and then you edge it out all tight.
Yep.
Like, you immediately see the fruits of your labor.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a nice scent of cut grass that goes with it.
Yep.
There's nothing better.
Yep. So you were... I think some people know this, but some probably don't, that you were in the military. Is that correct?
Some people call it that. Air Force, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
And you were a photographer, right?
I was a photojournalist. Yep.
Okay.
The joke I always tell people is I say, yep, when I was in the Air Force, I shot over 1,000 men, women, and children with my camera. So thanks for the courtesy laugh. But yeah, I went in. So when I got out of high school, I went to junior college here, St. Petersburg Junior College, and I went there for 2 years and finished and graduated with an AA and still didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was like, I want to see some things. I want to get out. You know, there was no internet back then, so you couldn't go on the internet and see other people doing things that maybe you wanted to do or experiences that you might want to have. What does it look like? So the world was very small to me.
Yeah.
And we traveled as a kid. The only place we ever traveled to is North Carolina. That's where we vacationed. So other than that, that's really was my worldview. And I said, I want to go somewhere where I can still feel secure, because I was always grown up, you know, get a good job that has secure benefits and give you a pension, that kind of stuff. And so I thought, well, I think the military would be that. And I wasn't one of these guys that wanted to act like I was some kind of badass guy, you know, because mm-hmm. I knew I wasn't. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go in the Air Force then, because that seems to be really where I might be able to fit in better. And I had an uncle that had been in the Air Force, and my dad was Army and told me under no circumstances should I go in the Army. So I said, all right. So I went into the Air Force, and I went in without a guaranteed job or anything. It was in between. It was 1993, so it was after the 1991 Gulf War. We were kind of in that period between. And so I didn't go in with a guaranteed job or anything. I just went in and let them assign me a job. And I'm guessing because I had a college degree, they gave me the job of public affairs. And so in public affairs, you're on the command staff. And so it's a little bit more of a professional type environment, because you're working directly for the commander. And the three things that we did in public affairs office was we did internal relations, external relations, and media relations.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is really public relations. So the internal relations was mainly run through a newspaper. And every base had a weekly base newspaper. And that was the first job I got right out of tech school, which tech school was at Fort Benjamin Harrison in Indianapolis. And then my first duty station was Southern California. So boy, I won't go into too much detail, but it was really cool, because all of a sudden now I'm doing something where I can take people's voices with this newspaper. I can go and go to the softball games, or I can go when somebody has twins, or I can go when somebody's kid becomes an Eagle Scout. And all of these things that went on in the community, again, no internet really back then, I was able to get these stories out and get them in a newspaper and get people attention and get people notoriety or get people whatever they needed. That was really cool for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed doing that. So that's where I really learned to take content and put it into something that people wanted to read or wanted to know about or wanted to follow. So that was a great job for me. The other thing we did was a base tours, because it was also external relations in the community. When community groups would come in and wanted to tour the base, we would run the tour program.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I learned, got a love for public speaking, because I was running tours of everything from adults to, you know, kids in college or whatever would come and tour our base.
Yeah, that was one thing I was going to kind of ask you about, was your background in that, because I think it's pretty evident that you can tell that you're, you know, the way that you can present, you're very comfortable with it and good at it.
Yeah, so. It kind of goes back to what we're talking about. You know, as a kid, I danced and got in front of people and started to learn to like that. And then when I got into the Air Force again, yeah, I was given tours of the base. And then even in my last job before here, I was going on, I'd go to conferences and speak in conferences. So yeah, I've always been somebody that liked the spotlight and liked to, and it's, I think it's pretty obvious. It comes across as arrogance a lot, I know, But it's just when you love something a lot, or you like to, you have something you want to say, or you want to be in front of people.
Yeah.
It's just, it's kind of how it comes off sometimes. But yep. Yeah.
So then how did you make it up to your, like up to the northern part and where you moved to basically at that point?
So when I got out of the Air Force in 97, I ended up going to college in Northwest Indiana to a private Baptist college there. And that's where I ended up. And when I went through school and got done with school, I didn't ever finish. But when I finished going to school, when I thought I was finished, I just stayed in Northwest Indiana. Mm-hmm. So that's how I ended up there.
So how much of a shock was it for you as far as like just acclimating to that kind of, not only weather, but it's a little bit different Midwest culture too, a little bit, I would say.
Yeah, it is. So interestingly enough, how you were saying you just now seen palm trees and that for the first time. I never saw snow for the first time in my life till I was 21.
Yep.
And it was when I was in Fort Benjamin Harrison in Indiana. So I didn't understand what snow was like. I mean, it's the first time you see it, you're like, oh, this is cool. But then when I actually lived in Northwest Indiana, I started realizing, wow, this is not fun. This is something I got to get used to. So
yeah,
I don't think I ever acclimated really.
Yeah. So at that point, did you go straight into, how did you get into working in the lawn industry, like professional lawn industry? I mean, you talk about it all the time. So I think most people know that you kind of went through the corporate True Green thing, mm-hmm. but there was some probably decision there where you were like, well, I had this interest. So how did you get into that part of it?
So it's when I first got to Indiana, I got a job as a telemarketer, and we used to sell insurance over the phone, mm-hmm. and that was like 10 bucks an hour, and I was doing really well at that. But there was a company, and this is when I'm going to college, so I would go to school, I would study to be a Baptist preacher, and so I would go to school every day until 1 o'clock, and then I would work in the evenings. I had a GI Bill and stuff, but that school had some limitations to it with that, so I still had to work. I mean, I was married at the time, and so I had a job at night. So I started with a telemarketing job, but there was this guy that would come in from True Green and recruit all the best telemarketers.
Okay.
And so he started talking to me and eventually convinced me, hey, you got to come over to True Green. And at that time it was True Green Chem Lawn. And he said, we'll pay you a lot more. We'll give you a base salary. I was like, wow, base salary. That's awesome. So while I was going to school, I just started working there, and I started there in 1998 in the spring. And my salary, base salary, was $19,000 a year plus commission. And you weren't. It was seasonal. Everybody would tell you you're going to get laid off in the fall, so you make all the money you can in the spring. You make it work through the summer, and then that's it. Then you get laid off.
Yep.
I was like, all right, let's do it. And so I started. It was telemarketing sales. And so it wasn't, listen, this wasn't lawn care. I learned basics. They show you what a dandelion is. They show you how to measure a lawn. That's the main thing they wanted. They wanted the measurement of the lawn, because if the lawn is not measured properly from the jump, it will throw off all of your metrics going forward in your P&L. Mm-hmm. You'll be off. You can't predict your revenue. Your chemical costs will be sky high. It throws your labor off. So you got to get that good measurement. Now, we're south side of Chicago, so everything's like 1,000 square feet anyway. But some of the suburbs did kind of move. But that's what we do, is we go out and run these leads. We make sales. And that's how I got into it, because you'd run 30 leads a day. You'd come back to the office, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. All the guys would be there. Everybody's coming in, rah-rah. You've been running your leads all day. And it literally was kind of like a boiler room in a way. But we had a lot of camaraderie. And we're all these kids that are all studying to be Baptist preachers, because we all went to the same school.
Yep.
So there gets to be a lot of competition in there. And it just turns into this really fun environment. I made some really good friends that are still some of my best friends today, actually.
Yeah.
From those days. But telemarketing eventually wore off, and you weren't allowed to do it anymore. And then we went door-to-door, and we pioneered door-to-door marketing, and mm-hmm. we get into a lot of cool stuff with that. But that's where I learned True Green. And then when I decided I no longer decided to be a Baptist preacher, I just stayed with that company. And I liked True Green. I did. I really liked True Green. And I wanted to be a part of that, and I wanted to grow with it, and I did. And I moved up the ranks and held a lot of different jobs. I became a general manager of a branch, which was a real honor to do. I moved into regional management and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. So,
yep. So as far as, obviously you didn't really know cool season lawns at all when you got there. So was that kind of at all, did you enjoy that process of learning all of that stuff? And did you have anyone kind of helping you with that part? Or was it just like, I'm learning as I go, just out of necessity, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. I actually, my first couple years at True Green, one of the things I would do, because I didn't want to be laid off, is I would go into the production department. So when you're in sales, when you start winding down at the end of the year, they will take some of the best guys and they'll move them in so you can do aerations usually. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's been in the business has done that. And so I didn't want to be laid off. And I actually liked the outdoor work. And one of the advantages I had in my college that I went to is they had a night school. So in the falls, I would switch from day to night school, and then I would work all day in the field and do aerations. Mm-hmm. And when that ended, then they had a need for somebody to do pruning. And so there was a guy named Dave Walsh that kind of mentored me, and he taught me all about trees and shrubs and pruning trees and shrubs. And we used to, I mean, I really loved that, man. That was some of my favorite work I ever did, was pruning here in Chicago. Yeah. And everybody that knows, you just have a couple evergreens out front. Some people have the spiral junipers, and we would carve those up, or they have the pom-poms, we call them, mm-hmm. pom-pom junipers, we'd carve those up. And I love trimming crabapple trees. We would do those with hand pruners and shape them. And we would do some of the tight shaping, and we'd do some thinning. And anyway, lots of, so he mentored me through that. So that's where most of my knowledge came, was in tree shrub, mm-hmm. here. And I learned all about disease and insect on tree shrub and everything. So that's where my, and I became really good at sales the next year. I was the number one tree shrub sales guy because of that experience.
Yeah.
So that's, it's so funny. That's really where everything moved for me. I was the tree shrub guy. It wasn't until I moved up into management and I became an operations manager in Merrillville, Indiana. That's where a couple guys there, a guy named Chris, really started teaching me about lawns and weed identification and what weeds mean and why. And we had some really smart guys there that knew about soils. And so that, it was very late in my triggering career that I actually started truly learning about grass. Prior to that, it was literally six applications a year, pre-emergent in the spring. Mm-hmm.
It's like a formula, kind of.
Yeah, just, that's what it was. It was, yep. Just do it.
Yeah, okay. So did you enjoy like the management part of it too? Like, because that's kind of a different side of things compared to, I mean, managing people is a different side of things compared to just marketing or whatever.
Yeah, I love that part actually. So one of the things I would pride myself on when I was moving up in the ranks is that I'd bring my boys with me. And so anybody that had been loyal or we had worked together or done things together that wanted to move up, I was like, come with me. Mm-hmm. And that's how True Green was in a lot of ways. Not in a bad way either. You knew those guys over in Detroit, those dudes are hardcore over there, right? There's this group of guys that had all just moved up together and built branches together, you know, and that's how we were in Chicago too. We're the Chicago region. We're bigger than everybody else, you know? Yep. So there was a lot of that, a lot of testosterone going on. But so when I had guys that I had worked with, I'd be like, hey, man, there's a marketing manager position over in Hickory Hills. I'd really lobby for one of my guys to get that. That's what I loved, was mentoring other people and bringing them up in the business. And mm-hmm. some of those guys are running branches today,
yeah.
still in True Green that I worked with. So, yes, I always love that mentoring part so much, man, being yep. able to put yourself into somebody else. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So at what point then did that kind of become, you know, you were starting to create your own content around lawns? And because I know you said you started with web, which what that's what it was back then, a blog or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the way that all started was probably 2006. By that time, I was a marketing manager, and I was like starting to get a little frustrated with maybe some of the way things went in the company. You know, that's how it is. When you're with a company for a while, you start to question things. And I do have a big mouth, and I would start to say things, and I would be told, you know, just be quiet. You're going to hurt your career here. Just, you're doing good. Keep going. Don't question things. And I can see that in a lot of ways because, you know, shut up, dude. Just do your job, you know. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, I'm going to start going on the internet and seeing what's there, because that's when, you know, the internet was getting bigger. So I started going on, and I wasn't finding anything about lawns. I was finding no good answers. I was like, man, there ought to be an opportunity here. Like, somebody could really put out some information here that might help us with our customers, because a lot of... The way True Green does business, it's not conducive to educating the customer. It's really about price.
Yeah.
So when they would cancel, we didn't have anything else to save them on other than price.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, if we could get information out there, if we could become an authority figure, we should. We're the biggest company in the world. We should be the authority. Mm-hmm. And the internet has no one as an authority right now. It could be us. That should be us. And I would say that to people in management or above me, and it wouldn't really go very far in that, you know, they were all about direct mail. So I said, you know what? I'm going to start doing this, and I'm going to become the authority, because maybe at some point people will find my content and it will help me with my customers. When they call in and they have a problem, I'll say, hey, there's a video online. Go check it out. At that time, it wasn't videos. It was
yep.
blogs or whatever. So that's where I started. And I started with a blog. It was called Life and Lawns. And I think I started that in 2008 or 2009. And it was originally, I would do kind of correlations between your life and growing a lawn and try to be funny about it, but it eventually turned into just tips. That's what people wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing lawn tips on that Life and Lawns blog. It's still alive today. I don't own it anymore. But that's how all that kind of came to fruition, was out of frustration, really, is what I started my blog with.
Mm-hmm. And they were probably thinking, too, like, we don't want to tell people things because this is our business. And if they start learning all this stuff, they might find out that, well, we don't need this.
You know? Yeah, and I didn't discover that piece of it until social media really became a thing. You know, Twitter started to take off in that, and you know, YouTube came in 2005, I believe, but it wasn't a bigger thing until later. But when social media came in, Facebook, I started thinking, you know what we could do? What we do is really awesome, and not anybody can do it because of the equipment we have is expensive, and the products that we can get. See, back then, homeowners could not get the products that we can. That's a very important point to make. And I thought, let's show them why we're so awesome, why we have to be licensed to use this stuff, and let's show them how difficult our job is. Pulling hose is not easy. That guy that's out there on that route, you know, he's got hose management. I like to joke about hose management, but you can really, you know, you can save yourself hours in a day, not hours, but minutes in a day, which can translate to hours across a lot of routes just by proper hose management, by getting through things. Why does it only take us 1,000 square feet a minute to spray? Let's show why. Let's show this awesome equipment we have. And by the way, on the backside of it, let's highlight these really awesome people. Some of the people at True Green that I worked with had been there 25, 30 years. Yep. These guys bleed green, and they're awesome people, and they care about lawns, and they know about the lawns in their area. They will know the soil differences from one street to another just because they've been doing it for so long. And I'm like, we got to highlight these people. These are awesome people, and they're what make us awesome. That was my thing, and you're right. It was give everything away, because what that'll do is teach people why we're so awesome. Just give them all the secrets.
Yep.
And I just, that never translated. So that's originally how I started, and that's what I do today. I give away all the secrets.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever, how did the whole LCN thing, as far as like that, once it transitioned to video, was there a specific thing in your mind like, okay, I want to do this, and I want to kind of have this, because I know you said it's kind of like a character in a way that you're playing a little bit.
It actually started, so the channel actually started, it was called Lawn Care Midwest. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's still in the URL in some places, because I was an SEO guy. So one of the things that while I started blogging that I started learning was search engine optimization and internet marketing, which we call it digital marketing now. But I started learning all of that on the side, because you do that. When you run a blog, you want to figure out how to get more traffic to it. And I went down the spammy road and did some black hat kind of stuff for a while and learned all that. But long and the short of it was I started the YouTube channel as an SEO play. I'm like, hey, I can just go on here and just put on like, you know, how to seed your lawn. How to stripe your lawn. I could do these how-to questions, and I could get traffic that way. You know, and I was selling ebooks back then, by the way.
Yeah.
The original version of the ebooks that I have for sale now was $7. It was like 10 pages, but it's very similar. I don't know if anybody still has it. It's PDF. Uh-huh. It was very similar to what's there now. Now it's just highly expanded. But so, yeah, I started as an SEO play, but I had to be careful because I was still working for True Green when I did that. And True Green didn't necessarily know about my blog or care about it, even though I was getting 15,000 visits a month, which was a lot back then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily knew they knew about it, but I did have a non-compete agreement. And if I started doing too much video with my face on it, I was afraid that they would be like, bro, you can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
So I only did a few videos in the very beginning as SEO tests. And it wasn't until later that I kind of unleashed it. But that's, where the character part came along is once I kind of did leave True Green in 2012 and realize that, hey, now the cuffs are off. I can say whatever I want on video. I can do all things I wanted. That's when I started doing the whole Tim the Toolman Taylor thing. I've always loved Tim Allen and Home Improvement Show. And it's his whole thing, how he's klutzy at his job, but always things kind of turn out nice in the end. And when he screws up, he hangs his head and tells everybody you messed up.
You're not trying to be perfect.
I just always respected that in that show. And so I do believe I try to take a lot of spin from that and how we do things.
Mm-hmm.
So
then you moved on to working for kind of like a startup, was it, kind of thing? Mm-hmm. Was that kind of a hard decision to finally move on, or did it kind of, was it from that, like, well, I want to make these videos, or I want to like work on this content too, and I need to move away from the whole corporate thing?
True Green just got to a point where, you know, I was frustrated. I was in my 30s, and I think like a lot of men, you kind of man, is there something better out there? Can I do it? And I never had the guts to ever go out on my own, because the logical course for me would have been to start my own lawn care service. That is what I should have done, but I didn't have the internal fortitude to do it. I didn't have the guts to do that, and I knew it. I was self-aware, which is good that I didn't. So I got to a point, though, at True Green that I was frustrated enough, and this opportunity came up. My neighbor, Jake the Lawn Kid, his dad, Eric, at the time, his girlfriend, her name was Jamie, and she started working for this company, this little startup in Naperville, Illinois, doing digital marketing. Now, I had had my blog and everything, so I knew digital marketing as well, and I was learning it on my own. You know, I was just this guy in my basement learning it. she was working for a legit company. So we would get together in the driveway and hang out, all of us, and she would talk about this new startup she was working for. And I was like, I bet you though they don't know anything about digital marketing. Only I know. I've been through the ringer. I know how this works, you know? Yep. And she would tell her boss about me, and he would say the same thing. Oh, I don't want to talk to your neighbor, some guy in his underwear doing SEO, black hat, whatever. Well, eventually she's like, you guys need to shut up. And we had a meeting, and we got together, and we realized, holy cow, like, we really do know SEO, both of us. He told me all about this new company he had started, and it was, they do digital marketing for auto dealers. And so he started, and at that time I had had a couple clients that I took on too, just on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, I need somebody to do social media for our 13 auto dealer clients. I'm like, I can do that. So that's how I started with them as a contractor, doing their social media for their auto dealer clients.
Mm-hmm.
And after only a few months, he came and we got together and he made me an offer to be his first vice president. I was employee number 9. And it was a very large pay cut, actually, because I had moved up. I was in regional management at True Green at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that was a very tough decision. I literally remember counseling myself and saying, just have some balls, dude. You're going to be all right.
Yeah.
And my wife supported me at that time, which was very important as well. And that was it, man. I made that jump, and it was the best thing I could have done.
Yep. So how long did you work for them, for that company then?
So I started there in beginning of 2012, I believe it was. Yeah, spring. And I just left in 2018, so 6 years. I had a one-year hiatus in between there where I ran digital marketing for a large auto group out of Hilton Head, South Carolina.
Okay.
But other than that, I worked for there for 6 years. So I saw that company go. I was employee number 9 all the way to well over 500 employees, and they were just acquired last year for $160 million
mm-hmm.
by Cars.com. So that was good to see. Yeah. I didn't get any of that. I always tell people. I got to see it. I got the education. I have a wonderful friend and mentor out of it, and that I couldn't have ever gotten any more than that. And obviously I made a lot of friends along the way there too, and learned a lot about digital marketing, real digital marketing, like in the trenches, you know?
Yep.
So awesome experience.
So during this time, as far as when you actually started getting on YouTube and doing, have you always been doing kind of a weekly thing, or was it kind of more sporadic at the beginning?
You know, I don't know when I fell in. I think I fell into the weekly cadence, and it was very sporadic in the beginning. It was whenever I could do content. But I think it was, again, 2012 when I left True Green and went over, and I realized I could kind of make something of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, YouTube was really becoming something then. I was watching like the Shaytards back then.
Yep.
And who is that prankster out of Ohio that got real big with his daily vlogs? Anyway. Yeah, Roman Atwood. Thank you. Roman Atwood. I started watching him, and I was like, man, I could do what these guys are doing. I really could. And Philip DeFranco was around back then. So I said, I'm going to get a cadence here and start doing it weekly on the weekends. And that made sense. I was working a job Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I didn't have True Green, I didn't have to work weekends anymore. So I started doing the weekends. And now I don't know how to go through a weekend without shooting a video. It's really weird.
Mm-hmm. Just part of your routine.
Yeah,
completely.
Just it's part of it. I can't mow my lawn without a camera.
Yep. Yeah, I kind of know how that goes too now. But so you have talked about it a little bit. Like, you kind of felt like, okay, I'm kind of all alone doing this out here for a while before any of us showed up, or before. Did you feel like what did you see for the vision then? Did you think like, oh, this is going to turn into anything like huge? Or were you just kind of like, well, we're our own little niche thing and maybe it's just going to be fun? But
if I'm honest with you, I knew 100% that it was going to be something. I didn't know if I would ever be something. But I realized and I knew very early on that YouTube was going to be something,
mm-hmm.
and that YouTube was going to offer people a chance to have a voice. By the way, I used to watch, like Matt Martin, I used to watch your music channel.
Yeah.
So you had 10,000 subscribers when that was like, you'd be like in the top 1,000 of the whole thing. So I remember that. I mean, we all do. So that's what's funny to that. But yeah, I always knew YouTube was going to be something, and I knew it was going to destroy TV. Mm-hmm. I did know that.
Yeah, I wish that I would have known some things back then, specifically with the music, and I just was like, I don't know, I didn't know anything about how to really push it forward. It was just like, oh, this is fun. But yeah, back then, I knew I was gaining like a little bit of a following, but I didn't really know what that meant then.
Yeah,
know?
Right, that goes back to, you know, there was that blind spot, that's the original influencers. You're like, I know I have an audience, but how can I monetize it? That's really what it is if you're just direct about it. And it, you're right, when the platform is so new like that, it can be difficult to understand, I don't want to mess this up, and I want it to continue to grow, but I also need to be able to monetize it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been an interesting thing that we're all seeing even now, is how can we continue to do that and keep the content real and keep the audience growing? And
yeah,
that's exciting to me, by the way.
Well, and one thing I wanted to touch on is, I think probably people would naturally think, like, maybe since you were kind of the first one doing this, that you would be against a bunch of other people coming in to, like, make videos. And that's something that I've always talked to you about, as far as, like, you really appreciate community, and as a whole, everybody learns the more, like you said, repetition.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've always appreciated, that you've let in all these other people, because I want to say that it was kind of started by you. I know you're not going to like that comment, no, but...
Listen, what it's about, it's if I'm the only voice, people aren't going to stick around very long. Mm-hmm. You got to have... The thing that makes a community great are the different voices in the community.
Yeah.
If we're truly building a community for people to come in, because we do, we want the people to hang around. Mm-hmm. Well, if there's only one guy spouting off one thing, well, he's only going to get so big of an audience. There's only so many people that are going to be able to handle what he's saying, or like it or not like it.
Yeah.
So we need more people. And by the way, there's a many, many more ways to do things than just one person's way.
Yep.
So I have a voice, a very unique voice, and a very unique story from True Green is where I learned. And then I did digital marketing and so, and then I love pitching, and I put all that in there, right? And I love to write. And not everybody's going to be like me. Everybody's going to have a different voice or a different approach or a different way of doing things or a different way of entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And without that, I don't believe we would be where we are. None of us would.
Yeah.
We've got to have people in a community that people want to come to and want to be a part of.
Yep. Yeah, it's completely true. So did you ever think that you were going to be moving back to Florida? Like, was that ever part of a plan that you had in your head, or it was just kind of like, well, I've never lost my Florida, you know, heritage or the want to go back, but...
Yeah, it was always the plan.
Okay.
I was homesick for many years in Indiana. Again, I had great friends there. But every winter would just be harder and harder and harder for me. So no, I wanted to get home to Florida whenever I could. We just had to wait for the kids to grow up and get out of high school. And when mm-hmm. they both decided to go into the service, my wife and I were like, wow, this is great. We saved all this money on college too.
Yeah.
but on top of that, we can go. Like, we're done. So we immediately went as soon as we could.
And yep.
God bless her for saying yeah, because she loves the warmth too. She loves the beach. She's born and raised in Indiana, but she loves it down here too. So.
Yep. Yeah. I can definitely see that. I was always growing up in Minnesota, I was always just like, I even told people for a long time, like, we were going to move north. And then now once I've gotten into this, it's like, no, I can't do that. Like, I have to think about.
I tell you, when I get people down here and I get them, they all want to move here.
Yeah. Especially right around this time of year where we're just on that verge of it being nice, but it's just, we still have to wait quite a bit. Yet.
Yes. You're getting to that point, though.
Yep. So as far as Milorganite, let's talk about Milorganite, because you've kind of become like almost like a pitch man in a way of like something that you probably never thought was going to go in that direction.
Yeah.
But how did you first learn about the product? Or,
by the way, I love being called a pitch man. So I love Billy Mays, and I love pitching. I know some people get annoyed at that, but I love it. I love even being self-aware that I'm overly pitchy sometimes. I love it. Mm-hmm. But Milorganite, I love telling the story. Is I was working for True Green, and I was very new in the late 1990s, and we were telemarketing, and I called this customer up. Back then, we had what were called green sheets, and so you'd have a telemarketer that would call through this list of just like a phone book kind of, and they would ask people, hey, we're going to have a sales rep in your area next week. Can they leave you a 14-point lawn analysis? If the person said yes, bam, out would kick a qualified lead, and I would run 30 of those a day. And so I would run the lead. I would go there, and again, I'd get the measurement of the lawn, come back, call people at night. So I called this one guy. He was in Oak Lawn, Illinois. Or I think I can't remember if it was 60655 Oak Lawn or Evergreen Park, but those are all areas up there off of 95th Street on the south side of Chicago. And I remember calling this guy, and he goes, my lawn is way greener than any lawn that you guys do. I don't need your service. He goes, but I'll make you this deal. You come up to my house right now. He goes, and I'll show you my lawn. And if my lawn doesn't look as good as yours, then I'll buy the service. I'm like, all right, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up there, and this dude's lawn was like dark blue. And I said, what are you doing? He goes, I get that Milorganite stuff over by there. That's what he said. I'm like, you get what? I get that Milorganite stuff. I'm like, all right. So I went back to the office, and I'm asking guys, what is this Milorganite? And they're like, I don't know what it is. Guys didn't really know what it was. So I went to local Home Depot and figured out what it was. And from there, I was like, all right, that's interesting. That's all I knew. I didn't know anything about biosolids. And then it was a couple years later that I actually bought my first house. Yeah, I used to sell people True Green, and I didn't even own a house. I bought my first house in Griffith, Indiana, and I immediately got Milorganite and started throwing it down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started realizing what it was and how awesome it worked. And my lawn looked better than all the True Green lawns. Again, it's different because I was throwing down mass amounts, right? So it can't compare to a True Green lawn, but I don't care. That's when I started realizing how much fun it could be to actually start jacking with your own grass. And so that's where Milorganite came from. And then over the years, when I started doing my original videos, I would just put in the videos because I loved it and I liked it. And I did, when I started doing those original videos, I always thought to myself that I wanted to make sure that I could talk about products people could get. Like, it's stupid if I'm out here talking about things you can't get. So Milorganite was one of those that you can get. And so I would use it and work it, and people would talk about it. And it kind of became this little bit of a thing, you know? And I think that's hilarious. And so eventually Milorganite and I did connect, and I found out that they're just awesome people that I work with over there. I really like what they do and what their philosophy is. They're true environmentalists. They, that's really what their mission is to keep people safe in Milwaukee and also subsidize their cost to treat their water. So they're, you know, I love what they do there, and that's it.
Did they talk to you at all? Like, this past year, there was kind of the big talk about, well, it's becoming so popular that there's a shortage. Did they ever say, like, you know, we need to, what are we going to do about this kind of like a thing, because we're running out of product or whatever?
No, they don't. You mean, do they tell me to back off or
anything? Well, no, but I mean, like, are they like, well, what are we, you know?
I think that they are looking for ways to try to make it work and try to get more out there. And but I don't, they don't talk to me about their production.
Yeah.
I just think it's hilarious that we sold them out. You know, there's obviously a lot of competitors in the market now coming in. I actually enjoy watching that. I think it's funny that companies are seeing now a way to fill a hole in a market and they're getting it. But,
and you've been talking about that a little bit, kind of with your Florida product, like that's very similar that you've been talking about too. Like, there's different places to get it. It doesn't have to be one.
Well, here's
specific.
What's funny. So Sunnyland is the distributor for Milorganite in Florida, but then they also have their own product too. So I work with those guys, and I think it's smart. They see a hole, they fill it. I love that kind of thing. You know, the thing is if Milorganite continues to be sold out, that's good. That means the marketing is working. You know, I mean. But I still want to be able to find those alternatives. And that's been the good thing to the folks at Milorganite. They don't tell me, oh, you could only talk about us. That's one of the reasons I love working with them, too, is they're like, dude, just do your thing. We know you love us. Just do it. Just be yourself. And they don't hold me to any kind of exclusive deal or anything like that. So I do love that, too.
Yeah. So with the community, we've seen quite a bit of growth, obviously, just even in this last year, with more people creating, but more people really interested in lawns and kind of learning about it. Where do you have any vision or kind of that you think it's going towards? Like, what would be your ultimate vision, you think, of where we could go with it?
So this goes back to the way I see our community developing. So the way I speak to this is there are 90 million homes in the United States of America, single family detached units, right? 90 million. If I'm the biggest at 225,000 subscribers, you see where the opportunity is. That's why I don't mind when you guys come, you're like, oh, would I feel threatened? No, there's 90 million people we have to get here, right? So there's no, we're only the tip of the spear right now. And I believe right now that our fans, our community, are the early adopters. That's why they're so rabid in a good way. And so they are the ones that are going to spread the message, whatever the message is, that, hey, that what the message they're going to spread is that you can have a nice lawn and you can care for your lawn, you can have pride in your lawn. That's the message, right? So they're going to help us spread that. So that is our opportunity. Now, how do we get to those 90 million? Well, YouTube's going to do its thing, and it's going to bring people in just because the YouTube ecosystem is growing. But, you know, I like to bring people in too. We do a lot of advertising. I spend a lot of money in advertising, going out to people that have not been exposed to our community. I try to bring them in, and that's what my email does. We have a nice introductory email we send out that says, hey, sign up for our email list. We'll send you these really nice guides and teach you about lawn care. I really feel that is my responsibility to the community, is to start reaching out and getting the people that may not know who we all are and bring them in, so that way they can get acclimated and we can all grow together and all of our boats are going to rise together like a rising tide. That's where I see it. So if you want to know where I think the future is, it's how do we get these other 90 million people into our community? Because I don't want them to go into, I mean, they're going to go into other communities, but let's get them into ours too. In other words, let's grow too, you know? So that's where we're at.
And I think that obviously it becomes a little bit regional, as far as, you know, a lot of people say, well, I know where you live and I live somewhere similar, so it helps that I can follow along with what you're doing. But the concepts are a lot the same, but yet the weather and different soils and all that too, there's plenty of room for people to kind of have their own little area, you know?
See, and that's what I love about it. Exactly. Everybody can specialize in their thing. You know, if it's St. Augustine grass or cutting really low or having Bermuda grass, or nobody really wants to have Bermuda grass. But but what I'm saying is, I'm saying that because Real Low Dad's over there.
Yeah.
But I lost my train of thought trying to bust on his chops. But I think, yes, we can all specialize, and we should all specialize. And that goes back to our message. We're all if somebody else comes in and starts doing St. Augustine grass content like I do, mm-hmm. great. Just that's fine, too. You have a different voice than I do. But collectively, we're all still interested. So I watch a lot of car channels, right? Mm-hmm. I like to watch Cletus McFarlane. He's a guy in Florida, and he jacks up. He'll get like a Corvette and put a giant motor on it, a blower and all this stuff. And, you know, but I also like to watch the Tesla racing channel.
Uh-huh.
See, it's all car guys. So that's me. We're all just grass guys, and we all can watch each other, and we can all still enjoy the content, even if, I don't have Kentucky bluegrass in my lawn. That's okay. I like seeing somebody mow it at 1/32nd of an inch. It's still really interesting to me. So,
yeah.
You know.
So how did you, we've been talking a lot this past year about like soil, about some of the liquid products, things like that. How did you meet John Perry and get into the whole Next thing? Next as in the actual products.
Yeah, the products. So I actually, Matt Martin and I started networking together. And when I started writing my original guides, when I said, I'm going to write some guides here, I said, I really want to have somebody with some real chops besides what I do, because I don't have that kind of chops. I want to have somebody review my guides and just look at it. It was the pre-emergent. And I said, look at it and make sure that I'm not telling people anything wrong. So he agreed to do that. And in those conversations, he said, you got to talk to John Perry, because he was doing videos then on Aerate and that. That's mm-hmm. back when he loves to tell you he was in his days of trying to prove him wrong.
Yes.
So I was watching during that time, and that's when he said, you know, you ought to talk to him, because there's some homeowners that, I guess homeowners had been reaching out to Matt, seeing if they could get some of this stuff. And he realized, you know, hey, maybe this is something you can do. So he introduced me to John. I went to that Real Green conference, which was January of 2018, and I met John there, and I sat in on his presentations on soils. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this guy doesn't talk like anybody I've ever met before. He talks about soil first. I'm like, soil first? What the heck, man? Let's just ride the nitrogen train to terror, man. Let's just throw down nitrogen. What do we care about the soil? What are you talking about?
Yep.
Hippie, you know? So, but I was kind of captivated by that and in the science behind it and the new ability to throw stuff down that it presented to me. Anytime I can find a new way to throw something down, I enjoy that, you know? And if it's going to do good and maybe give me a color pop or, I don't know, give me a new way to tweak my lawn or pull a different lever, mm-hmm. like that's really intriguing to me.
Yep.
And so they offered a little bit of that. So they got me some product. I started using it and throwing it down. And then you can watch all the video. Everybody's seen the videos from them where I kind of was at the very beginning told people, I believe, but I don't know. Yep. That's what I'll tell you. Now I know because I've seen what it can do and all that. But that's how I met him, through Matt Martin.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of on the same, like, you can obviously have a pretty, there's a lot of people right now who are like, well, we've been doing all these things, you can have a really nice yard, so why do we need to do anything different? And I wasn't on that same thing, like, oh, I doubt what he's saying. It was just like, I see what I did in my yard. It was very simple inputs. We just feed it. We do some things like mow properly, do all those basic things. I'm like, okay, why do I need it any better? But then it's kind of what John is always saying is like, well, what if we were able to do it easier with less, and then it becomes environmental talk mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
So. You know how I look at it? It's like a website. So when you can have a website that works well and it works okay, but you can always improve it. You can always optimize the website to make mm-hmm. it faster, to make it more user-friendly, to make it convert better. So mm-hmm. this goes back to my digital marketing stuff. The ultimate goal with the website was to get it to convert better, so the customer didn't have to spend as much money, didn't have to input as much money into marketing the website.
Yep.
If we could get it to convert better, if we could optimize it better. And that's how I look at the lawn now. Sure, we can throw down. I tell people, and I want beginners to not get too crazy. Go get some fertilizer, preferably an organic so it doesn't burn anything, and just throw it down. Mm-hmm. Just freaking hose it, baby, because it's going to look good.
Yep.
But over time, let's start to optimize it so you don't have to spend as much money putting as much stuff down, but you can get the same or better results unless that's how you optimize a website for conversion,
mm-hmm.
and that's also how you can optimize a lawn.
Yep.
And I think those parallels work well, and that's intriguing to me, and that's why it started to appeal to me, because I do love digital marketing and that type of thing, so that's why what we're doing here appeals to me, that I could throw down other things, throw down less, 3 ounces, 1,000, and it's going to help my soil? Come on. But that's cool. That's yep. low input. So that really optimizes the lawn, and that's intriguing to me.
Yeah. So with YouTube, just for a second, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the full-time thing since you moved into it as an actual career and job, and I think that's kind of intriguing to a lot of people. Do you ever maybe give some pros and cons to, you haven't been doing it a terribly long time, but a little bit of what you've found about that, maybe?
So this is, interestingly enough, the first time in my life I've ever been self-employed. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean. I'm glad I never did it when I was younger because I didn't have the maturity level to handle it. And I probably don't even now. I will say it's been lonely. I have always had people around me at my jobs, people that I cared about their career and them as people and where they would go and how they would end up and how are your kids. And I don't have any of that. So that was tough. I think the other thing is I don't have anyone to necessarily bounce decisions off of. And even in the last couple months, I've made some stupid decisions. And probably, you know, I have to pay for those. Not, I mean, nothing. I don't want to make it sound like it's bad. But just some dumb decisions I made. Like, why did you do that, you impulsive idiot? You know? So I have had to learn to counsel myself like I never have before, while also trusting my gut. But I'm lucky I didn't do this when I was 25. So that's some of the tougher stuff. Some of the easy, or not easy stuff, but some of the positives is I can do what I want when I want. I can, if I want to put out a piece of content about this today, I can do it. If I want to put it out this tomorrow, I have all the time in the world to do what I want. And I like that. I like having no boss. Mm-hmm. But I have found that I end up working more.
Yeah.
Like I never stop. My wife's like, why are you, you're working way more than you ever did. So I have to kind of call that back a little bit. But
I think that is definitely the part for me has been like, I started kind of doing this basically as my full-time thing too last September. And so I kind of gave it the fall of just like trying to get into a groove of you just automatically right away, you just think like, well, it's going to be every day I make a video or every day I'm doing some kind of content, and it quickly becomes like, whoa, we need to slow down a little bit, because you're working 16, 18 hours, and that's fun still because it's something that you love doing, but you can quickly be like, well, I need to slow a little bit there.
For sure. And that goes back. So people, you hear this all the time. People go, oh, if you start making a living on your passion, you'll never work another day in your life. That is not true. What happens is when your passion is what puts food on your table, it can start to make you resent that a little bit. And I've been very cognizant not to let that happen. But the day that I open my laptop and I don't want to read those email questions, that's when I'm like, hey, dude, what's going on? This is why you're here. These questions coming in are why you're freaking here, man. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you got to be careful with that stuff. But
yeah. So for this season coming up, is there anything you're specifically excited about or want to kind of plug or talk about coming up?
I mean, I'm super excited about the podcast. That's why I'm glad we're doing this one, right? We both started podcasts this year. I just, you know, like anybody, I'm a Joe Rogan fanboy, and I just love what he's done. And most dude friends that I know are also Joe Rogan fans. So that just started telling me something, that this podcasting medium, people like to get content in this manner. And I also realized that, you know, growing up, every little town in America had a call-in garden show on Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. And I can remember my grandma listening to that on the way to church in the car. And I thought, this is what a podcast could be if I was going to do one. You know, I love yours because this has been so much fun, right? Yeah. Doing this, like getting and just letting me talk stuff that I wouldn't normally talk. And this is that kind of podcast. Mine, I want to make more like the call-in garden show. And I'm really excited about that. And that just launched. It's called Lawns Across America. And they've been running about 35 minutes. I don't know if they'll get much longer than that, but just answer questions that come in. Because I get so many, and so many are very similar. And I thought this would be a great way also to answer dozens of people's questions rather than just one at a time type an email. So I'm really excited about Lawns Across America and what that podcast can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great... I wasn't sure exactly what you were going to do with it because it would be kind of easy to just, like, your idea was just add content that we're talking about, the questions throughout the week. But I do really love that going to different sections of the country too, which you have the option because you have an audience everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's really awesome that people can ask from anywhere and you can kind of zone in on that climate for a little bit, see what's going on. And
yeah,
and it teaches you things too.
And I have people now that are around the country, what I would call experts, right? People in the business that if I don't know something, I can call them and be like, tell me what's going on out there right now. Why are people asking me about Brown Patch out in Southern California right now? Because I'm not out there. Mm-hmm. So I have people I can call that will help me with those questions too, because I'm always learning. That's why we're at this conference.
Yeah.
Because I need to learn more. I need to continue my education too. Yep. So that's part of what the podcast has done for me is answering these questions. I have to do a ton of research and I have to read a ton of labels on products. Well, that just, it's like educating myself while I'm going to create that content. And that's a win-win all around for me.
Yeah, completely. I'm the same because not ever visiting the South or being down there, I didn't know anything about warm season grass. And at first I was kind of like, well, I don't really need to learn that now. I need to learn what I'm doing. But at the same time, once you get the basis of things and then you just start to creep into, well, I have an interest because of education. Like, I just want to broaden what I'm learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've learned a lot just from your channel, but as far as warm season, but just from Matt talking about all those things too. And it's been awesome. So
yeah, Matt's a guy that knows it all. He's like a walking encyclopedia.
Well, I just really appreciate it. We're at an hour right now already, cool. So I appreciate you sitting down with me, and it's been a lot of fun to kind of learn a little bit more about your story, and I think it'll hopefully be interesting for other people to connect with you a little bit more, too.
Thanks, Ryan. It's been fun, man. I'm glad we did this. I was hoping I'd get to be on this when you launched it, so oh, thanks for having me in,
for
man.
Sure.
I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. It's been awesome.
All right, let's enjoy the rest of the day. Thanks.